Welcome to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. We have done it. We've reached episode 100, ladies and gentlemen. Episode 100 of Sports Odds and Ends. But nothing changes because there is sports news to talk about. I'm your host, King Kaz, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
I thought I was a little arrogant when I started this show doing three-digit episode numbers with leading zeros, but we made it to episode 100, and it made that decision worth it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very weird that on our episode 100 we are in kind of a whirlwind of sports that is happening right now. We've been talking about the women's soccer stuff. We got some men's soccer stuff to talk about as well to give mention to, and then we have a literal laundry list, shopping list of basketball things to go through from what we have so far with free agency, some odds and ends going on in the in just kind of the NBA or in the basketball sphere, and some MMA stuff as well.
Yeah, so let's get started with the soccer stuff. The U.S. women advanced to the semifinals by beating Kaz's team, France. it was a tough matchup. Like you said, France all around is just overall really good at soccer. Some people were saying that this basically was the final. So the U.S. will play England on Tuesday, I believe, in the semifinals. If they advance, they will play either Sweden, a rematch with Sweden, or I forgot who the other team is.
The Netherlands. The Netherlands, who beat Italy 2-0. Sweden beat Germany 2-1. Sweden's been relatively okay here. I haven't paid a lot of attention to them.
Sweden is one of those teams that's just, at least on the women's stage, they're just always competitive. Yeah, and there's always been a not like a super heated rivalry, because it's not like a regional rivalry, but there's just always been a competitive rivalry between the U.S. and Sweden. They've even I think they've even exchanged head coaches before. There's just a lot of both those teams have been very good for a very long time. So can
I really quick just kind of give like I said, I love the U.S., but I just want to give credit to kind of that game. Like you said, it was a really, really, really good game. I saw a lot of the highlights, and then I looked at a lot of the stat lines. And then one of the things that got me was the possession factor, which is kind of a big thing in soccer. France had 70% possession of the ball for a majority of the game, putting 20 shots total, 5 shots on target, which it's always a weird thing. If you're not into soccer, what that means,
it basically means if the goalkeeper had not been there to block the shot, then that would have been a goal. Or had somebody not, that ball was going into the net, had somebody not interfered. Yeah. It's not just shots in general. It kind of
shots is just anywhere near the goal.
it's just basically intent. Even if you sent that ball into the stands, but you intended to put that in the net, that counts as a shot. But if a good shot is a shot on goal. So
yeah. But I don't know. I still like kind of French soccer across the board. I think it's really good. I just think they came across a slightly better U.S. team, even though they didn't have the greatest possession of the ball. They, out of the 10 shots that they took, 8 of them were shots on target. So that is an amazing percent right there. Of just accuracy and you know, kind of knowing where you are to be able to put it on goal. So shout out to the USA and winning that against France, and hopefully they continue to do good.
Going into this tournament, I think the US had a ton of options attacking, and it was the defense that was supposed to be kind of shaky. The you know, they don't have Hope Solo anymore, so they've got a brand new goalkeeper, a back line that wasn't, I think Julie Ertz was kind of the centerpiece of the defense before, and she's moved up to midfield, and now the whole back line is kind of questionable, and they, you know, France came into this game with the intention of attacking Crystal Dunn, and basically she held her own. She wasn't great, but it's kind of hard to be great when the other team is just constantly attacking you over and over and over again. You're going to screw up a couple times, but she did incredibly well for being the focal point of, you know, for being the main target of attack for the other team.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's basically what made the difference is, you know, France had a plan and they weren't able to execute that plan. So that's, whereas the U.S. was, and just, I guess, shout out to Megan Rapinoe, who has had a fantastic tournament. I think in previous years, she's kind of been a mainstay on the left side. But this year, I think, you know, with a lot of the figureheads of the U.S. team retiring, this is kind of her time to shine as mm-hmm. the leader of the team. She's basically, she scored the last four goals for the U.S. Yeah, so this has been a great tournament for her.
Yeah. Yeah, she's risen her star. Like, she was already kind of like the most well-known name on that team, I want to say. But she's kind of taken this chance to like really, really rise up and make herself very well-known in soccer in general, not just in women's soccer, but just in the sport in general. She has made herself a very well-known person. And I think now, kind of going into these next couple of games, she's definitely going to be on that list of people for teams to look out for. Because like you said, scoring those in the game against France, the two goals they got were by her. And then in the game against Spain, the two goals they got were by her as well. So England is definitely going to have to look at her as somebody to like kind of pay a little more defensive attention to.
The U.S. men are playing in the Gold Cup quarterfinals today. They will play Curacao. Yeah. If they win, then they're basically on a collision course with Mexico in the finals, which is pretty much how the Gold Cup always plays out.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody does their job, it ends up being U.S. versus Mexico in the finals, and then it's kind of a toss-up whichever team wins.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to with the whirlwind of stuff that's going on in women's soccer, I haven't had much of a chance to look over the U.S. men's soccer team. And I don't know if you have before I ask you what you think of them.
No, I haven't. And this is kind of okay. How it should be, because one of these teams is good and the other one is not really held up their end of the bargain the last couple years. So this is a continental competition too. And the Gold Cup is kind of weird because it's not like the Euro tournament where they do it once every 4 years. They just do the Gold Cup every 2 years. So it's almost like, it used to be that one of the ones every 2 years determined which team was the representative of North America in the FIFA Confederations Cup. But since FIFA has gotten rid of that tournament, that basically makes these Gold Cup competitions just, you get bragging rights for 2 years, either U.S. or Mexico. And so that's it's kind of lame. I mean, I shouldn't say it's that lame. It is the Continental Cup competition for North America, but it doesn't have the same punch that the European tournament does.
Yeah,
the African Cup of Nations or some of those other tournaments that don't happen as often.
Yeah, I think it's kind of this weird thing where soccer on this side is generally given to like Brazil or those other regions were never really looked at that much as much of an opponent. But I think I don't know. I feel like this is the time when where we need to start showing that we can be somewhat good, but we'll see.
I guess in free agency news, Neymar, well, I guess not free agency, but soccer transfer news, Neymar has apparently agreed to a contract to go back to Barcelona. But the two teams still have to work out the transfer deal because Neymar still is under contract with PSG. Well, I mean, I'm bringing this up just as a long-term follow-up to the original story a couple of years ago when Neymar signed for a world record transfer fee. And now he's on his way back to the team that he left. So this is kind of weird. And when he gets sold back, he probably will be sold back at a discount. We were wondering at the time, like, is this move going to be worth it for PSG? Is this going to bring them Champions League trophies like they want? And turns out it didn't. And he only lasted there for 2 years.
I mean, they did okay. It definitely helped raise the stock of PSG as a team to look at in the French region. But I think more of that came on the heels of Kylian Mbappe being the big star that he was coming off of the World Cup.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, you lose. I mean, stars tend to, you know, and we'll talk more about this with the NBA stuff, but stars tend to congregate together sometimes and they mm-hmm. want, you know, if the point is to win competitions, you kind of want to go where some of the other stars are. So when Neymar leaves, who knows what Kylian Mbappe is going to want to do as well. So he might want to leave too. And
he might end up
being the sign that, okay, PSG, like, you tried it. This was your shot. You got a shit ton of money, but this is the best you can do with this. Okay, maybe it's time to go somewhere else.
I think that's one option, right? And I think that's kind of generally the American option, but I think maybe if as I say is true, and the French are making kind of this bigger push to put more stars into the soccer limelight, and in that do it through homegrown French soccer, maybe the thing now is to look more internally and maybe bring some of these other big French stars who are playing in places like England and in other parts of Europe back to France and start building big French teams. You know what I mean? That are consisted of French players, as opposed to these players who much like here in America, right? We get a once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime, like, really good soccer player, and they show out in America and they're really good, and then the overflow of money comes from Europe or Germany or in this case now France, and then that draws them away to play in a better, bigger market against bigger competition. If PSG, being kind of one of the bigger names in French soccer, can keep their homegrown star and then start and then kind of sell him on the fact of bringing back more French players to France to play around him and to kind of keep that mystique of French soccer being as amazing as it is, and then that leads into the next men's World Cup. I think that could be an option. Is that how that might play out? I don't know. We have to kind of wait and see, which is our favorite thing to say on this show. But I definitely think that is an option.
Yeah. One other soccer story we'll push until a little bit later in the show, but that's the discussion about video replay in the Women's World Cup and how much of a mess it's been. A couple basketball things just to take note of before we get into the NBA free agency talk. The league is going to experiment with coaches' challenges in the summer league this year, and a couple extra rule changes, transition take foul rule, and they're also going to play around with a motion track basketball. So it's a little bit of technology news.
I would assume that's something similar to like what we have in baseball.
I think all that tracking is done by cameras in baseball. I don't think there's anything like inside the ball, which I believe like advanced NBA statistics, they do a lot of the camera tracking of the ball, but I think they're going to actually put a sensor inside the ball so that kind of tells you exactly where it is.
I think we talked about this one time a while ago with baseball and the possibility of putting some kind of micro-sized sensor in the ball to track data. So I'm all for this. I'm all for technology making the game more like just better, giving you more statistics to look at as either a player or a coach or an analyst or whatever. Just kind of giving you more raw data to just kind of go through.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see what they end up doing with this. They're also investigating, or at least soliciting ideas for how to shorten the schedule. So right now it's an 82-game season, and we saw towards the end of the NBA playoffs just what kind of a toll it wreaked on specifically the Warriors for all the injuries that accumulated with them. But then even all the teams that were quote-unquote healthy were all banged up. Kawhi Leonard was playing through tons of injuries. So
you being kind of the bigger basketball fan of the folks in the room right now, what is your take on the season as it is now, the 82 games? And then what would be your shorthand on an amount of games that still feels like a season, still feels competitive, but maybe shortens the schedule a little bit?
I think, you know, from what I'm reading about all the sports science surrounding this, it's not necessarily the amount of games, but it's the travel in between all of these games that is that really messes with players. You get hurt, and then you have to get on a plane, and then, you know, and then just be, like being on a plane and being up in the air does things to your body. While it's trying to recover from injuries, it's like a lot of injuries happen on the second night of a back-to-back. Especially when you have to, when like you're on a road trip and that second game of a back-to-back comes, like you fly in that morning and then play a game that afternoon or that evening. It's situations like that lead to injuries, and lead to, you know, more wear and tear on the body.
Okay.
So it's almost like they don't need to shorten the season by that much, but they need to shorten it by enough to make the scheduling a bit more flexible so they can have fewer back-to-back games. And if a team does have a back-to-back game, maybe it's at home, and and then that ends up being a little bit easier on everybody. I think they added like 2 weeks to the season a couple of years ago. And when they did that, they were able to reduce by a lot the number of back-to-backs. And this year we saw a lot less of the quote unquote load management type situations where stars were being rested in the middle of the season. And when I say being rested, I mean like they, you know, find out the day of the game that they just weren't going to play at all. And the NBA had a situation where there were marquee matchups on national TV you know, with the Warriors, when the Warriors just decided, you know what, we're just going to rest three of our stars. So that's, there's been a lot less of that, but mm-hmm. you know, I mean, even Kawhi Leonard said during the playoffs, like if he hadn't done his load management this year, if he hadn't taken a couple games off here and there, he would not even be in a physical state where he could even play towards the end of the season. So yeah, the issue with shortening the schedule is that, like, all the contracts that are negotiated, all the league revenue is based off of an 82 game season. So if they're going to shorten that, they need to make up that revenue somehow. Otherwise, they're not going to vote to do that. Like, all the TV deals they've negotiated with their local networks, that's all based off of an 82 game season. So it's a big bureaucratic ordeal to change from what they have now, just to even change it, and to change it to something that brings in less revenue is going to be a non-starter. So they have to come up with ways to bring in more revenue. And so some of the ideas that are being thrown around are, like, let's have a mid-season tournament, which I think some of that is supposed to be kind of modeled after European soccer, where they have, like, multiple competitions throughout the year. They have the league competition, which is, you know, there's no playoffs at the end of the year. It's just a regular season, and whoever has the most points at the regular season, that's who wins the league. And then they have, like, a cup competition, which is played throughout the season, or several cup competitions. And then they have the Champions League. They have all that. And that's kind of a tough thing to introduce in American sports, where we're kind of used to there's one champion every year, and that is the team that won the playoff tournament at the end of the season. So that's they'll have to play around with that a little bit. I kind of have my own ideas, but I don't want to get into it right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a tough situation, but I feel like the league is a lot more willing to explore this now, after they've seen, like, you know, losing Kevin Durant for an entire season next year is a big deal for the league. It's, you know, and this kind of happens every year. There's just, like, one marquee player that's just ate it, and they're going to end up missing an entire year. And so I feel like the league feels like they have to do something to correct for this. It just, this 82 game season, I think people get the impression that, you know, these games, especially early on in the season, they just don't matter that much. It's not quite like baseball, where there's 162 games, but it's roughly half of that. And that's already, it might be too much. So, like, maybe if they reduce to something like,
I mean,
70 or 60 games, that might make each game feel a little bit more special.
Yeah, but I also think baseball also has kind of figured out things a little bit with having that back-to-back be played by the same two teams, yeah. You know what I mean, on a day. So you have a little bit more time to kind of, like, even though you're playing either two games a day or, you know, two games in a row, you're playing in the same place, like you said, right? So if the Yankees come to Baltimore, they're going to play Monday and then play Tuesday and then probably play again on a Thursday. So you have that recoup time before they have to travel to the next state or the next destination or back home. And then I think that kind of is better than you're going to play here, then you're going to play somewhere else on Tuesday. You're going to play here on a Monday and then play somewhere else on a Tuesday. So it's definitely something that they might need to play with as they continue to go forward with that.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got some Knicks news.
Yeah.
The Knicks were fined for
sounds for about right.
The New York Daily News from one of their post draft press events. There's kind of this long running feud between the New York Daily News and Knicks owner James Dolan, and that basically led them to being banned from that event. But apparently, because this was like an official press event and not like a private Knicks party, that's not allowed. Like, you have to let the press in, like all of the press, like any, especially like a major organization like the New York Daily News, you have to allow them to come in and cover your team. And so the NBA has fined the Knicks for doing that. And and on top of that, that basically has shine an even brighter light on the Knicks and kind of their both their incompetence and pettiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of starting to be who the Knicks are. We kind of continue to go, like, they're just kind of becoming this team that is owned by people you just kind of don't want to trust. And it's just kind of becoming bad. And I don't know what's happening to them.
Well, speaking of former Knicks, Stephon Marbury has been named the head coach of the Beijing Royal Fighters. Stephon Marbury, since leaving the NBA, has carved out a really nice career in China.
Yeah.
And he was kind of one of the first players to do that, to, you know, like, we've had Chinese players want to come play in the NBA. And so Marbury is kind of one of the first players to say, you know what, the NBA situation isn't really good for me anymore, so I'm going to go play in a different country and do really well over there. And since then, I think a lot of NBA players that were kind of fringe NBA players have done really well in China. And so that kind of raises the question for me. I kind of asked this on Reddit when this was announced, but, you know, Marbury's won a couple championships. He's got a statue in one of the cities where he played. Like, I'm wondering, since it's the Basketball Hall of Fame and not the NBA Hall of Fame, is Stephon Marbury a Hall of Famer?
I think he wouldn't be, just because I think even though it's just the Basketball Hall of Fame, it is very American centric, and I think people are, no matter what, going to only ever want to pay attention to the game that they can consistently see, even though there's probably a myriad of ways that you could watch Chinese basketball. I think people are only ever going to be like, the NBA is the main thing and everything else is a minor to the NBA, is what most people would have in their brains.
But maybe we're talking 20 years from now. The NBA, or sorry, the Chinese league is just a very viable second tier league, maybe on the same level as the Euro League. And, you know, and if that's the case, then maybe we look back and we see that somebody like Stephon Marbury was the guy who kind of helped kick that off. So,
yeah, no, I think in that regard, I think we there should be more, like, world accolade to sports, and rather than just, you know, the if you're just going to call something the Basketball Hall of Fame, I think it should be that. It should be for the best players in their region. People, like you said, like Stephon Marbury, who have done things no matter what, just in the game of basketball, that have either evolved it or helped it or made notoriety to it or done things that seems like no one else will ever be able to do.
Yeah, and the, I believe there is like a contributor, I believe that's what it's called, like a contributor class of Hall of Fame inductee. And so this is for people that, like, you know, they didn't necessarily play a long time or what, but like maybe they made some sort of innovation to the game that that helped its growth. And so maybe that's the kind of thing that would fit for him. I know that, you know, there's been some players that have come to play in the NBA that didn't necessarily have the greatest or longest careers, but because they were pioneers, they end up in the Hall of Fame. Like Vlade Divac, off the top of my head, is one of those names. He was just part of that early crop of European players to come in, and so even though he didn't have the best career out of those guys, so it's, you know, I think you know, when you look at overall impact, maybe that would be an interesting name to throw in that hat.
Then the thing is, at the current moment, his impact on the game of basketball is still not over, because now he's getting into coaching. Yeah. And maybe that puts him in a position. And I think at some point they gave him Chinese citizenship, right?
I don't know. I do know that I don't think he speaks Mandarin yet, despite being there for years.
As long as he's been, yeah. But I think don't quote me on this, folks out there. But I think either last year or the year before, they gave him Chinese citizenship, and it was kind of a big thing because, you know, that's generally something they don't give to anyone, which I think would make him eligible to coach national teams, possibly, or maybe he becomes like this amazing coach, and maybe that then brings him back to the U.S., where then he can use all this knowledge that he has, and then he has a scouting route into China as well. Like, so there's so much more that could possibly happen for Stephon Marbury, just as he continues to, like, just grow in China. Like, China has been such a great thing for his career, so who knows what it will continue to do.
Yeah. Speaking of who knows what it will continue to do, video replay has been.
Yeah. So you mentioned this at the top of the show.
Yeah. It's. And I feel kind of bad about this because I was one of those people last year that was like, oh my God, video replay is great. And you know, it's doing amazing things for soccer. Like, now there's going to be less diving and, you know, you can't cheat the refs as easily. But now we're kind of seeing the other side of the coin, and it kind of took a year for it to turn that way. But it's reached the point where, and we talked about last week how like there's nitpicking about goalkeepers standing on the line during penalty kicks, and so that's like an example of like one of those things that they can nitpick over, where it was something where you probably wouldn't have even noticed it by eye before. It wasn't really a controversial thing before, but now the way the rules are written, if you look at the replay and you have to apply everything by the letter of the law, then yeah, there's these calls that should be overturned. There's been a lot of offsides calls where it looks like you wouldn't even notice this, you know, at live speed, but, you know, on the replay, somebody's toe was 2 inches ahead of the last defender, the second to last defender, which is, you know, by rule, if any part of your body is past that last person, then it's offsides. And these are rules that are designed to prevent cherry picking. So you don't just stick somebody in front of goal and then just hoof the ball over to them. It's designed to provide movement, designed to encourage offensive play. Choosing to apply it, to enforce the rules this way is, you know, it's like the equivalent of being cited for going 51 miles per hour in a 50 mile per hour zone. So I think FIFA is definitely going to have to look and examine how they're applying these video rules, or maybe they do apply it this strictly, but they change the rules themselves to make it easier to apply. I feel like this is not just an issue for soccer. Like, we talked earlier about the NFL and their pass interference rules that are, you know, now pass interference is going to be reviewable. So now, you know, if somebody has their hand in the wrong place, is that all of a sudden pass interference?
And yeah,
it's, you know, there's a lot of questions, and you know, this is a technological question that applies for basically all of sports, and it, you know, how one sport chooses to enforce it might have an effect on how other sports choose to enforce their rules with video replay as well. So it's just one thing to keep an eye on. Wait and see.
All right, what's next in here? Oh, so all right, we got some NCAA news to talk about. What's going on with this California story?
Yeah, so the Fair Pay to Play Act is a bill that's moving through the California state legislature right now. And the bill is going to force all California colleges that average over $10 million a year in media rights revenues to allow their student athletes to earn compensation for their names, images, and likenesses. So okay, this is not, they're not paying the players, but they're basically, the teams cannot prohibit players from making money off of endorsements. Basically all the other deals besides, like, you know, getting paid themselves. If you end up as the cover athlete on a video game, like, you can get paid for that. If you show up in a commercial on TV, like, you can get paid for that. You can hire agents to help you get these deals. These are all things that are basically banned by the NCAA, because you're supposed to be this student athlete that, because you are supposed to be an amateur athlete. But this law potentially makes it so that players in student athletes at California universities basically so that the schools cannot prevent those players from doing that, which,
okay,
the NCAA, Mark Emmert specifically, has threatened that if they're going to allow this, that basically gives California schools a competitive recruiting advantage. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, because the playing field is not level, that means that, you know, they possibly shouldn't let California colleges participate in NCAA postseason play. Basically just a blanket ban on allowing any California schools from being in, you know, the NCAA tournament or any bowl games for football, just because this rule might incentivize potential players to go sign with California schools. So it kind of creates that imbalance mess if this act were to pass. But yeah, the NCAA is basically threatening it at this point just to try to influence legislators to not pass this bill.
Yeah, that's a, So I kind of read like the first few parts of this, and I was like, okay, that's cool. That seems right. That if you are earning any excess revenue from them, that they should get some kind of compensation for that. But it was just weird to think that I think the second part of that is what caught me as weird, in everybody kind of being against it in that way. But I think it makes sense, kind of. But I don't know if that's the way you go about it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that, like, it creates this imbalance. But,
yeah,
I'm kind of on the side that, like, every state should do this. And that's what the NCAA is afraid of. That's why they're fighting against it. Like I agree that, like, it definitely gives an advantage to California schools. But it's an advantage that every state should have, to the point where it's no longer an advantage for anybody. Like, this should be the rule across the board. Student athletes should be, at least if you're not going to pay them, at least if you're going to make billions of dollars off of their backs. And they establish a threshold here. If you're making over $10 million a year in media rights revenues, then you are definitely making money off of your student athletes, off of their names, off of their popularity. The arrangement is they play for you, you give them a scholarship, and that should be the only arrangement. You shouldn't be able to profit off of them any further than that. I think the NCAA is trying to take advantage of the fact that, yeah, this would create an imbalance, and trying to use that as a reason to disincentivize this potential change. They're definitely doing it because they're worried that other states are going to look at this and realize that it makes sense, just as much as you and I think it makes sense.
Let's hope it goes that way. Let's hope that more states get behind this, and not the thing that is being proposed in taking probably one of the biggest states in college football out of the running of college football.
Yeah. All right. So let's move to the big stories that we postponed the recording of this show for. I was kind of hesitant. Like, I was wondering, like, is 1 hour after the free agency deadline a good time to record the show? Is enough stuff going to happen before then? Turns out that concern was completely bullshit, because it not only did all this stuff happen in the last hour or so, it basically all of yesterday, all of Friday before then, the rule is that teams are not even supposed to start negotiating with players until 3 p.m. today, which was about almost 2 hours ago. But basically, as long as there's no proof that, you know, a specific person talked with a specific player, anybody can report that a deal has been done, but as long as there's no proof, then nobody can bring down any tampering charges on anybody, which kind of speaks to how dumb Magic Johnson had to be to get hit with tampering charges twice, because he went on TV and talked about players. Like, if he had just done all this stuff behind the scenes, nobody would have been able to prove anything. And he kind of tried again with Kawhi Leonard. He's trying to be a part of the meetings with Kawhi, which I think was partly at the request of Kawhi Leonard. But the NBA called his agent and told him, no, you can't.
Is that just Kawhi's way of being like, yeah, I want to meet Magic Johnson? All right.
Kawhi Leonard could do whatever he wants at this point.
I'm sure he can, but it's just like, hey, you know what? Two birds, one stone. I get to meet Magic Johnson, and I get to have a meeting with the LA Lakers.
Yeah. So, I guess just quick summary of
let's get into it.
Yeah, so Kristaps Porzingis, we talked about that trade before. We talked about it being kind of a risk for the Mavs if he chose not to re-sign. He re-signed with a max contract, 5 years, $158 million. So that gamble paid off for the Mavs, even though he didn't play at all for them this year. But going forward, that's going to be between him and Luka Doncic. That's a pretty strong core to build around. Nikola Vucevic is re-signing with the Magic. He was probably one of the high-profile centers that was on the market. He didn't have a great postseason. He probably would have gotten a max contract otherwise. Klay Thompson is re-signing with the Warriors. That was one of the big things that we were looking out for, is what's going to happen with Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, and how much of this Warriors team is going to stay intact, especially with Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant being injured for most of next season, or all of next season in Durant's case.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson is staying, 5 years, $190 million max contract. So that three-man core of Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, the one that won a championship a couple of years ago, and the same one that won 73 games, that core is still intact.
So as we go down this list, right, kind of Klay Thompson was one of the bigger names that stood out to me. Obviously, Kristaps Porzingis as well. I think the Klay Thompson re-sign with having some of the other information that we also have now, we now know that Kevin Durant is going to be going to the Nets for 4 years for $164 million. I think this starts to build out a very interesting vision of the West Coast, because a lot of these guys that you have in this staying list of notable names are all West Coast teams, except for maybe the Bucks.
But one thing that was really bothering me about, I mean, so as a fan of a Western Conference team, especially one that was kind of on, I don't want to say on the bubble for making the playoffs, because the Kings were actually 9 games behind the 8 seed. But it's like, this is how competitive the West is. And then, you know, coupled with the fact that good players want to go to competitive teams. And then most of the free agents were actually free agents from Eastern Conference teams. It was only these two guys from the Warriors that, like, if they went to the Eastern Conference, then maybe that would kind of help balance things out. So I was worried that a lot of free agents in the East would want to come West. It looks like that hasn't happened too badly. I don't think there's been a little bit of movement. I think whatever Kawhi Leonard decides, that's going to be a big deal when it comes to adjusting the balance of power between the East and the West. Obviously, like, the Lakers have retooled, but so far they've taken guys from other Western Conference teams, mainly Anthony Davis. Kevin Durant going to the Nets, going east to the Nets, is a big deal. In shifting that balance of power. And just him leaving the Warriors in general, it kind of takes the Warriors from this unbeatable juggernaut when they're healthy into a good but beatable team lot of other Western Conference teams can compete with.
I kind of want to start our talk on kind of winners and losers in this free agency pool there with talking about what the Nets have done. So every discussion on every radio, even here on this show, was a lot about Kevin Durant possibly going to the Knicks, if not staying on the Warriors. A lot of it revolved around the possibility of the Knicks or some other team. I don't think anyone, and I didn't watch every single ESPN thing, so someone out there might have said it. I don't think anyone had the Nets on their radar as a place that Kevin Durant was going to go.
Well,
and then
say that, but I put a $1 bet down on Kevin Durant getting the Nets in May. So,
all right, JVZ is a goddamn savant.
This was kind of recent development. The thing about the Nets is that they were a good, exciting young team. D'Angelo Russell helped.
Yeah,
you know, he was an all-star this year. Everybody was really happy with how much the Nets have been able to recover from a disastrous trade that they made about 6 years ago, where they basically surrendered their draft picks for the next 5 years to the Celtics so that they could basically rent out Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce for a couple of years and make a playoff run that didn't really end up going anywhere.
Because we know how much everyone in the NBA loves broken all-stars.
Well, at the time, they weren't broken. And at the time, that trade was seen as, like, at least somewhat even, or the Nets got the best players in that trade. But nobody expected those two players to fall off a cliff so quickly. And so that trade kind of became the poster, like, warning sign for, like, do not surrender your future to try to make a push to win now, unless you're really, really close to winning now. So I
feel like a team recently did that.
Yeah. The Nets, like, it took them a long time because they didn't have draft picks to build from and they were bad. And they were also in salary cap hell. So it took them 5 years or so to get out of that, but they got out of that a lot quicker than anybody expected. And then, Russell turned into an all-star. And
I'm not gonna lie, right? I'm looking at this roster of the what the Nets currently had. The only notable name on that roster for me is D'Angelo Russell.
And who was a restricted free agent. So basically they had a ton of cap space.
I've been told by our producer to not disrespect the name of Spencer. Dinwilder?
Who basically came on Twitter today and fired shots at everybody else who told him years ago that he shouldn't have signed an extension with the Nets. Because now he's got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving as teammates, who I think we neglected to mention that Kyrie Irving chose.
Well, we were getting there, and we got there somehow.
And DeAndre Jordan is probably going to join them.
Knicks. I mean, right now on paper, that is a team. That is a team to look at. They don't have any notable big men. But that is a team to look at.
They're going to get DeAndre Jordan, so that's definitely a competitive team. Basically, adding D'Angelo Russell probably not coming back, but this is basically a team that made it to, you know, I want to say the seventh seed in the East. So this was a playoff team. Now you take away D'Angelo Russell, who is a promising young player, but he's not Kyrie Irving, who is, you know, an established good player at the same position. So you bring in you upgrade, but I mean, there.
Kyrie could play up. You know, he could play shooting guard, and you could still have D'Angelo out there or vice versa. So
I don't think they can afford to keep D'Angelo Russell at this point, because keep in mind, they just signed two max players.
True.
So this is why the Knicks were or sorry, this is why the Nets were seen as this potential free agent destination. The other factor being that they also play in New York. So like you get the benefits of being a marquee name in the largest market in the United States, which is great for endorsements, you know, all that. That's part of the reason why the Knicks are always in free agency discussions. The problem with the Knicks is that they're the Knicks, and so they have that stank on them right now. And
Nets
don't. And the Nets are a team that's trending upwards, and so you get all the same benefits of playing for the Knicks, except you don't have to play for the Knicks. And that's basically it. And so that's what I was thinking in my mind. Durant is probably wants that. He wants to make as much money as possible, so he's going to want to go to a big market like New York. But he's not going to want to deal with the Knicks bullshit. And there's enough space in Brooklyn, enough cap space to sign him and also bring in another, you know, another couple big names along with them. So yeah, the net, I mean, this is a remarkable recovery from the Nets to go from where they were, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It's also a sign to like every other team, you might be in an awful situation right now. Like, and there's a couple teams after this free agency that are in a pretty awful situation that it looks like it might take you a couple years to get out of this hole, but it's definitely possible to get out of the hole. The Nets just proved it. And, you know, they've gone like they are championship contenders now. And, maybe they might have to wait a year because Kevin Durant, is going to be gone for all of next year. But, for the next 4 years or so, they are going to be contenders. And this is, you know, Philadelphia had the process, and this was, I think, a much more difficult process to go through. Philadelphia managed to kind of do this by acquiring and hoarding assets, like first round picks, and the Nets had to. They started without first round picks at all, without even their own first round picks, and they managed to make smart deals to acquire some more. They made good trades where they took on salary and other people's first round picks, you know, just as you know, in order to as compensation for taking on that salary, and they did. They took on those salaries in years where they weren't going to be competitive. So it was just a lot of smart planning to get them to this point. Sean Marks, the GM of the Nets, is probably going to be in the running for executive of the year next year. And for making good on all of those moves that he's made and turning the Nets into a contender so quickly.
No, you're right. I'm still recovering from you saying you get all the accolades of playing in New York without having to play for the Knicks. That hurt.
I think one of the other winners is the Boston Celtics, I would say, because they were looking like they were going to be losers, that like they were going to lose Kyrie Irving, they were going to lose Al Horford, but they managed to sign Kemba Walker for a max contract away from Charlotte. That was one of the names that was rumored to go to LA as well. And so Celtics swooped in, got him. I kind of think Kemba Walker is just as good as Kyrie Irving. Do you get Kyrie just Irving a name without the bullshit of Kyrie Irving? I think that's a good move for them. They're working on trying to re-sign Al Horford, but they've got to do some shenanigans with the salary cap if they're going to make enough room for that.
So I think one of the other teams looking down in here that I want to talk about is because this is some of the names they're signing is the Kings. Trevor Ariza, Dewayne Dedman, and re-signing as well Harrison Barnes.
Yeah. So the Harrison Barnes thing was, I think when they traded for him at the trade deadline last year, that A was a big deal because their only small forward on the roster before that was Justin Jackson, who was a rookie, or not a rookie, but a second year player who hadn't really, I mean, he was a middle first round pick. So like the expectations weren't that high to begin with, but it was very clear that he probably wasn't a player that they could build around, that he was probably going to be a role player at best and probably a bench role player. But he was starting, and so that kind of sucked. So they had this big gaping hole at small forward. And so they managed to flip Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph's expiring contract to get Harrison Barnes, who was massively overpaid by the Dallas Mavericks a couple of years ago, hadn't really lived up to his contract, but has overall been a solid player that was kind of asked to do too much. So on the Kings, he's kind of the third option on offense. He also provided a good defensive presence. He is also like, he's the right size of player to play small forward, and instead of like plugging in shooting guards at that position and trying to, you know, make do with that. So that's basically what the Kings had to do last year. You know, like they played fast, but they didn't have players that actually fit the small forward position, which burned them on defense. So adding Harrison Barnes to the lineup, like, really solidified things in the starting lineup. So that's one small forward taken care of, and getting depth behind him by signing Trevor Ariza is a good thing. Trevor Ariza did not have a great couple seasons. Or basically all last year, he's kind of trash for the different teams that he bounced around on. But he's going to be a backup, so it's probably not a big deal. He signed a two-year, $25 million deal, and that second year is only partially guaranteed. So if this doesn't work out, they can get rid of him quickly, and it's not going to be a long-term drag on the salary cap. Dewayne Dedman is a big deal because Willie Cauley-Stein for the Kings at the center position was very, very, very frustrating and underwhelming. And Dewayne Dedman does everything that Willie Cauley-Stein does, but better. Almost everything better. But Willie Cauley-Stein, like the people who try to defend him say, well, he runs the floor very well. And to me, that's like, well, it's fucking basketball. You're supposed to run. Like just because he's a big guy who can run, like there's plenty of other big guys who can run. There's big guys on the roster who can run just as well as Willie Cauley-Stein can. So that's, you know, to me, that's not a benefit. I will say he's a better passer than a lot of big men, but I don't think that's as big of a deal because everybody on the team is a pretty good passer. So Dewayne Dedman is a much better rebounder, much better rim protector. Willie Cauley-Stein actually, I think statistically, is the worst rim protector out of all the starting centers in the entire league. So,
you have some feelings about this.
I mean, that's just a stat. the numbers don't lie in that situation. I believe, like, defenders have a higher field goal percentage when being guarded by anybody else besides Willie Cauley-Stein. Like, that's statistically, like, how we came to that conclusion. So trading him for a guy who is a good shot blocker, like anybody in the league who is a good shot blocker, would have been an upgrade. So yeah, three years, $40 million, you know, that's fine. The Harrison Barnes deal, 4 years, $85 million. A lot of people are balking at that number. It seems high, but it's also, they structured the contract so that the amount he's being paid decreases every year. So it's not the same amount every year. So while the Kings have a lot of cap space now, they're paying him a lot. And then that number decreases every year. So by the time that contract is the last year of that contract, I think he will only be taking up 14% of the salary cap. The salary cap goes up every year. His contract goes down. So even though it seems like it's taking up a big chunk now, by the time they have to pay their young players, De'Aaron Fox, Marvin Bagley, and Buddy Hield, who are the cornerstones of the team, they will have plenty of room to do that. So I think the Kings made a lot of smart, proactive moves today, and I am really happy with that, because every move that a Western Conference team makes like the Kings were like almost a playoff team, and I say that with caveats that, you know, they were 9 games behind the Clippers for the 8th seed, but if the Kings want to get competitive with those other teams and nab one of these playoff spots, I have no idea who's going to drop out, but if the Kings are going to be in position to take advantage of that, I feel like they've made the right moves today to make themselves a much more solid team and not just an upstart young team, but, you know, turning into an actual solid team that is worthy of making the playoffs in the Western Conference. So I'm happy.
Yeah. No, I'm looking at a lot of the moves they've made, and then listening to what you just said about the money they have, how they're spending it, and then the money they'll have even after this, it just sounds really smart. It sounds like the Kings have just made really, really good financial moves for themselves. Obviously, we mentioned this, the Knicks have done nothing.
Actually, while we were talking, the Knicks signed Julius Randle. So,
yeah.
So they got somebody, a good young player.
I'm just saying, at this point, with the names that we know that are out there, DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler, D'Angelo Russell, I doubt that we'll get Al Horford. I doubt that we'll get Kawhi Leonard. That's fine. But if they're not in the talks, If I don't see at least one ESPN article that says the Knicks are talking to Jimmy Butler or the Knicks are talking to D'Angelo Russell, I'm going to be mad.
Well, you're going to hate this because apparently, you know, they did all this stuff with the intention, you know, clearing out all this cap space with the intention of getting Kevin Durant. But after Kevin Durant's injury, they basically decided that they were not prepared to offer Kevin Durant a full max contract.
Remember last week I said I am not on the KD train. One, because I think he's the man child, and two, because I don't everyone live in the realm where you sign a right now player that can't play right now.
And I actually agree with you on that. Like this, particularly with the situation, they're getting killed on the media for this sequence of events, but I feel like once you do all those things to clear out that cap space, you can't go back and unclear that. So I don't think you make that Kevin Durant move, you make that Kevin Durant signing just because you did all this stuff before to sign him. I feel like that's a sunk cost fallacy. Like I think you're absolutely right on that situation. And I think it's a good thing that they didn't mortgage their future for something that's kind of an unknown.
Because for most of the people who we designed the show for, the Fly By Night sports fans, here's that key for all of you going out there, right? All of you people who live in Brooklyn who are going to go start buying Brooklyn Nets jerseys and showing up to games, you're not going to see Kevin Durant. Like, you'll see him, but you're not going to see him in the aspect that you think he will, because he's going to be out at least, not if not all of this year, for a majority of this year. DGM passes me a note that says you still get to see Kyrie, and that's great. But for you guys going there thinking, oh man, I'm gonna get to see this dream pairing of Kyrie and Kevin Durant, who no one ever dreamed about that pairing ever. That's not what you're gonna go see. You're gonna go see Kyrie trying to hold the semblance of a team together, to see how then later on KD is going to fit into that. And then all the talk from all media is going to be how KD is going to fit into this team when he does come back. It is only going to be the biggest wait and see like bigger than any sports odds and ends wait and see ever. This is literally the biggest sports wait and see to ever happen, because even if they do good, they're going to be like, oh man, wait till you see how we do with KD. And if they do bad, all they're going to see is say is wait till you see how we do with KD. Like, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah, I mean, it matters, but it doesn't matter.
The Knicks could have gone out and thrown a shit ton of money at any one of these guys. I don't know. Like, okay, so you don't get Zion Williamson. Mm-mm. You don't get Kevin Durant. Nope. It was the big prize. Probably not going to get Kawhi Leonard. Out of everybody else left, they either don't want to play for the Knicks, or the guys you can get are not worth maximum contracts. So I'm glad they didn't go out and just throw max contracts at anybody who would take one, just to get something. It seems like they've reached a state where they are content to be patient. Next year's free agency class is not that great, but you know, okay, maybe that means another year of rebuilding through the draft. It sucks to kind of have cap space that you're just sitting on and not using, but I think that's still better than paying out a bad maximum contract, because as we've learned before, sometimes when you issue a bad maximum contract, then you have to pay another team with a first round pick in order to take that contract off your hands. So at least they won't be doing that in the next couple of years. They'll be looking at their young guys and trying to, you know, build from there, which is basically what you said last week that they should be doing. Julius Randle is a nice pick to add to that, or a nice piece to add to that. He's a good
player. He is. But in that, before we do move on, or DJM wants us to move on, I do want to quickly get DJM's thoughts on this quiet but pretty good built Detroit Pistons team that has now added Derrick Rose to this roster.
Yeah, the Pistons quietly signed Derrick Rose for a 2-year deal at $15 million. They're using a piece of their mid-level exemption this year and then next year as well for the mid-level. I would say that if it were 2014, I would be up a fucking wall. I would be insufferable right now if this were 2014. Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson. Yeah, I would say, yeah, bring on the Eastern Conference. I'm ready for it. In 2019, my reaction is that it's kind of neat. It's kind of cool. Yes, yeah. Last season, Derrick Rose seemed to have the best season in years, including a 50-point game. Did not. Was healthy the whole year for the most part. Had a 50-point game even. Had a 50-point game. Yeah. You know, that's awesome. Was noted as possibly being the sixth man of the year. I think he got some votes for sixth man of the year, which is what it's looking like he'll be in Detroit, depending on whether he starts or Reggie Jackson starts at the point guard position. I think it's kind of cool, but I have several questions.
Yeah, I'm looking at this roster, and I didn't peek until you just started making mention to it at these ages, and they are skew kind of old.
Yeah. Blake Griffin is past 30 now. Derrick Rose is past 30. Those are the two in particular. And right now, with what I see with the Pistons, they're stocking assets while they have a few contracts coming off the books in the next couple of years. So I get the impression that the Pistons front office is trying to make one last final push within the next year or two. And this is the lineup they're going to go with. They're going to go with this lineup to see what they can do in the Eastern Conference. And I think it's kind of cool, I guess. I think. But I really hope that the Pistons medical staff and front office, they know what to do in terms of keeping these guys healthy. Credit to Reggie Jackson. He played all 82 games last year. Credit to him. Blake, he played over 70 before his knee gave out, and he was on one leg through the first round of the playoffs. The Pistons made the eighth seed, but Blake was on one leg. God bless Blake Griffin. I'm hoping that they find ways to load manage Blake, Derrick Rose, and Reggie Jackson. If they can do that, then yes, the Pistons will contend in the Eastern Conference. Because guaranteed, one, two, or all three of those guys are going to be out for 15 or 20 games. And they've got to find a way to work around it. Because the Pistons are letting Ish Smith go, and he was a great backup point guard. And he's probably going to get more than what Derrick Rose got. So, God, I just... They have to have the best medical staff, the best team masseuse there, have stem cells. I will donate blood if any Pistons players are A positive. You can at me, call me DJM, whatever. And load management is the theme of the season for the Pistons, because it looks kind of exciting, I guess.
For some reason, it gave me flashbacks to that Nets team that, you know, yeah, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, you know, if you roll back those guys 5 years, then yeah, this would be a great team. I don't think that's a fair comparison because those guys were a lot older, I believe, when that trade happened.
I mean, they got Zaza.
Well, okay.
He's 35. But,
I think Zaza was only a one-year deal. Zaza's gone.
Oh, okay.
So it's... I think the idea that these guys could have one healthy season together, I don't think that's too far out of the question. I think... you know, and the idea that these guys could, you know, quote unquote, return to their form from 5 years ago or so. I feel like Blake Griffin.
Well, I wouldn't even say that I want them to return from their form, because again, Blake Griffin had a dark horse MVP kind of year. He was genuinely great, and Derrick Rose had the best season he's had in 5 years. Andre Drummond was as solid as ever, and Reggie Jackson was as solid as he's ever been. It's why I'm kind of saying, yeah, this looks kind of cool, I think.
The thing is, solid gets you to the second round and in the playoffs. And
the Pistons have not won a playoff game in about a decade, so I think I would take it. And then in 2-3 years, when all of these massive contracts come off the books and their draft picks that they're stocking away start developing and growing into players, I'm kind of fine with it.
Yeah. It sounds like it feels like a plan. And I think as like NBA fans, like you at least, even if you disagree with the plan, you want to feel like your team at least knows what they're doing. They have a plan.
And before Ed Stefanski took over, the Pistons really didn't have a plan. Thanks, Stan Van Gundy! But now it seems like they do, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't know how far this Kings push is going to go, but it at least feels like the team knows what they want, and they're going out and they're trying to get those guys, and they're trying to build something. The fans can tell what they're trying to do, what they're trying to build. And we didn't really talk about losers much aside from the Knicks, but the Charlotte Hornets just got ransacked. And so they're going to be one of those teams that nobody really knows what they're doing, and they kind of have to start from scratch. And
did anybody know what they were doing to begin with?
Everybody knew that Michael Jordan, for some reason, liked to draft big white guys who can shoot. But he also gave up the rights to Frank Kaminsky. So they might even be moving on from that. But yeah, losing Kemba Walker is a big blow to them. Kemba Walker wanted to give them a discount on the Supermax contract that he would have signed, and they lowballed the discount. So I think they...
All right, you know what I'm... That...
No, like, I'm happy Kemba Walker is with a team that wants him now. The Charlotte Hornets are now starting from scratch. They are rebuilding. The Phoenix Suns were wondering what the hell they're doing, but they at least got their point guard after somehow rolling with no point guards last year. Ricky Rubio is now a Phoenix Sun. Indiana Pacers are kind of shifting things around. Things are still a little up in the air, but at least, you know, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, those names are sorted out. Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, Al Horford, and D'Angelo Russell, those are kind of the big dominoes that are left to fall.
So those are going to be the ones we're keeping an eye on. All right. So this is my last one before we go out of here. Damian Lillard getting a super max extension with the Blazers. Yes. I respect that.
Yes. It's almost like the Blazers are one of those teams where, like, you kind of know that they're peaking in the second round every year. But Damian Lillard is the cornerstone of that franchise. From day one, he's said that he wants to be there. He's shot down every rumor that's talked about him leaving the Blazers. He is a superstar that has ingrained himself into the city, and so the team has seen fit to reward him with a supermax contract. He's got 2 years left on his current deal, and he's tacking on 4 years, $194 million to that deal. He's kind of one of those players where, like, he is really good. He is more important to the team as an identity than he is as a quality player. He is an incredibly good player, but I don't know if he's, like, supermax quality. We're starting to realize that maybe no players in the league are good enough for supermax, except for maybe Stephen Curry. But you give him this contract anyways because he means that much to your city. And he's cool with that. The team's cool with that. The city's cool with that. 4 years from now, they might be talking about, you know, how hard it is to get rid of a contract like this. But I think 4 years from now, I don't think they're going to be thinking about trying to get rid of Damian Lillard because, like I said, he means that much to the city. So it's a nice thing to see. Even if this sort of thing doesn't bring Portland a championship, it's still nice to see a team do right by their players instead of lowballing their discount offers like Charlotte did to Kemba Walker.
Yeah. Like, you can't do that to a guy who's literally willing to stay and suffer through the badness that is your team.
Or if you're going to do that, or if you decide that you don't want them around, then you have to decide earlier than that so that you can trade them for something like the Kings did with DeMarcus Cousins. They didn't want to give him the Supermax either. So they took care of that at the trade deadline. That was at the time it was seen as a very risky move. Now it's seen as one of the smarter things that they've done. All of this is wait and see. This is all the off season still. As newsworthy as all of this is, it's the off season, and until these guys take the court and actually play, we won't know how well any of these moves worked out.
Yeah, it's all on paper right now. That's what the fun is in being kind of a fly-by-night sports fan, is you get to get excited for all of these possibilities, and then you just have to hope they live up to the dream that they sound like they are. But unfortunately, I've
been excited for the Kings to get back to the playoffs.
I just want to thank you guys. I just want to thank Kaz personally for being like our very own personal Stephen A. Smith. I just want to thank you for that personally.
I'm not that mad, and I didn't yell that much. I mean, actually, no, I am that mad, and I will yell that much, especially if these things don't start to look up. We have the money. Something better happen. All right. We made one move. Let's make some more in New York.
Smart moves, though.
But much like the NBA trade deadline, we are also out of time. Been this episode.
We got one more story.
All right.
And I feel like we got to squeeze this in, because if there's anything that this show is about, it is about. Well, okay, maybe that was a bad thing, but we've had a lot of stories on this show about people getting kicked where they're not supposed to be kicked, and thank you to Draymond Green for a bunch of those. But in this case, this was an MMA fighter, Jorge Canella, who was penalized a point in his match against Alfie Davis at Bellator 223 for kicking his opponent, Alfie Davis, in the butthole while he was on the ground.
Now, here's the thing. Who makes that call that it was actually his butthole?
That was the referee.
Fair enough.
He docked a point, and I don't know if this isn't really a thing where you go to replay and then you have a bunch of people at the screen just looking and seeing like, oh, is that his butthole? Is that where his toe went? Because Canella did claim that he only kicked his butt, not his butthole, and that Davis was faking it to get him to have a point docked.
Yeah, there's video on this story and everything. It's just kind of a weird situation for two grown men who are fighting each other, and then you kind of kick a guy like kind of in the center of his butt. Like you can kick a guy, like the whole thing with MMA is you can kind of kick in his thighs.
I believe the word you're looking for is taint. I believe that's the word you're looking for, taint.
I mean, they use butthole in this story, so I'm just going by the letter of the law here. But you're fair to kick a guy kind of in the upper thigh, in the outer, but not on the inner legs, when he's on the ground. I don't know. It's weird, man. Don't kick people in the butthole or in their taint or anywhere in that region in a professional fight ever. Don't do that.
So at least this didn't really have an effect on the outcome of the event. The Davis won the match 29-27 on all three cards. So had the points not been taken away, it would have been 29-28 on all three cards. So it didn't have an effect on the outcome. Just an interesting side note about this match.
I'm just saying, maybe they didn't give that guy another point because they're like, he's a butthole kicker. You kind of look at a man different after people tell you he kicks people in the butthole.
All right. That's our show.
Take it home, Dave Easy.
That concludes the 100th episode of Sports Odds and Ends. If you want to look at a video of a guy getting kicked in the butthole, head on over to sportsoddsandends.com, where you can find links to this story, all the other stories that we talked about as well. You can find links to iTunes and Google Play and RSS feeds where you can subscribe to this show. Thank you all for subscribing. It's been an amazing ride for 100 episodes, and we couldn't do it without all of you fans. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.